Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. I'm Greg and welcome into my home here at the heart of the Texas Medical Center in Houston, Texas, the most awesome city in the world, by the way. And you can see right over my shoulder that the sun's kind of going down here and over the medical center. And it was a beautiful day today, but sure, it was warm. And we had storming this morning, but not here. But boy, the lightning and the thunder was crazy. But just welcome to the program tonight. We have an extra special guest this evening. So I really believe everybody's going to be blessed. This is one of those that you're going to want to text somebody and say, hey, don't forget tonight. The Olympics, they're going to play that again later on tonight. They always do repeats of that. Watch this or tape the Olympics and watch this now because you're going to want to make sure you have a piece of paper or a pen and maybe jot down some things that could help you or somebody that you know of that's going through what our guests did tonight, and maybe some ideas and some thoughts of how to get through emotional pain that can blindside us at any given time in our world. So I just want you to be able to have that handy, to be able to jot things down. But if you want to get involved tonight, there's several different ways. First, you can text me right here, 832-396-6525. And my texts have been going unusually larger than normal tonight, right before the program, indicating that they know who's going to be on and they can't wait and anticipating. So hopefully they're all here listening now. But you can text me, 832-396-6525. Then during the commercial break, I will read those texts. I won't be so rude to read them during our guest interview. Or you can get on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. And my son, Curtis, in Seattle, Washington, in the United States Army, is running that for me. And if you comment on there, we'll be glad to look at those and read those comments. We've already had several comments on there in the last day or two. Trina was on there once, and I was on there to tell her she's going to be great. And then you can call into the radio show straight into Don, Doug, or TJ at the BBS radio station. That's 888-627-6008, and he will patch you right in live. So when you come in, make sure you're ready and you have your radio voice, and we'll bring you right on in without questioning what are you going to ask, and we'll patch you right in. You can talk to our guest and comment or have a question, whatever's on your mind. We'd love to hear from you. And I guess I ought to have an anniversary Twinkie or something here because tonight is our fifth anniversary of having our podcast on here with BBS Radio. And I don't think podcasts last very long in this world. You know, they always start off strong and then 6-8 months, they all start to die out. But we've been going strong for 5 straight years since 2019. And it's just been an honor to be with the BBS family. The radio staff is second to none, and I'm just thrilled. In the next week or two, we may have the best of or have some guests on that people think were the best, and maybe have them just come on and say a few things and try to get several people with a compilation of guests that we've had, because we've had some dandies. One of my favorites was Little Ricky off the I Love Lucy show, because I love I Love Lucy, but he was great, and I still talk to Keith periodically throughout the year. But we've had several great people, and tonight's going to be one of those best of guests, I promise you. You know, I tell you what, as I was going through our conference this week, and I drove all the way to Louisville, Texas, which is just north of Dallas, about 300 miles away. And I went up there Wednesday night after church and got back fairly late Friday night and spent 2 days with some awesome teachers speaking to them about anxiety, stress, sexual abuse. And I've dealt with and talked with a lot of people that's still carrying their emotional baggage with them. And I talked to them. I've had several conversations with them today via text, and I have a feeling we have a fairly large group of them listening in tonight. So I want to say thank you for welcoming me into your neighborhoods this week and being so kind. And we started off with a full room, and then after the first session, the second session was even more full. By the third session, they were sitting on the floor, standing out in the hallway. I was bringing more chairs in, and the fourth, and then the next day, it was just overwhelming. The people that want to come and share and talk and listen, and so I got some great met some great new people and friends, and I want to just talk real briefly because I want to give as much of the hour as we can to our guest. But how do you deal when with that emotional pain that sometimes is so deep that it causes a wound that you don't know you will ever stop bleeding from? And I think if you've had that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And you know, people says time heals all wounds. You tell them they're liars because that's not the case. Now, I may be wrong, and our guests maybe have better wisdom. It's never healed my wound. I'm not completely healed. I just learn how to live with it differently. I learn how to adapt differently to it. But I have learned just a few things. I'm going to go through these real quick if you want to jot these down. Number one, I have to understand and recognize that every single day of my life, I have to take baby steps trying to keep moving forward. Every now and then, it's 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Every now and then, it's 2 steps back and 1 step forward. But the key to me to be able to keep in that healing process is to keep moving. When I stop moving and I stand still and I just bask and marinate in that hurt and pain, that's when I realize the scab's being ripped off again of that wound. So I have to keep pushing myself every single day that today's going to be a better day. So take baby steps and don't try to take leaps and bounds because reality is baby steps is still progress. So don't be so hard on yourself. And also remember that you don't have to heal 100% for you to be able to improve your life. I don't believe, and maybe our guest tonight will have a different opinion. I hope she does, at least her insight on it. I don't think you have to improve. Heal 100%. I think it's a process. It's a life journey. And in that journey, every mile marker that we make it down that road is another sign of, hey, I've learned how to deal with that a little bit better. I've learned how to understand that a little bit better. And the third thing is I need to be at least a little patient with yourself. Patience isn't a virtue of mine. That's why I like to eat at Mexican restaurants because when I sit down, I want something to eat right then, and they have chips and salsa. And I just love that. I can start nibbling before I ever even think about what I'm going to eat. I'm just not very patient, but I have to be patient with myself. And I've learned that over the years that I'm my worst enemy. Absolutely. I'm toughest on me than anybody else, but try to be patient with yourself. And then set realistic expectations. I'm not going to be perfect, and I never will. I'm not going to be able to change within the next month or two, but over the next year, I ought to be better and understand life better than what I do right now. So I try to set realistic expectations. But then I try to understand the fifth thing, that I need to view my setbacks as part of life, and it can become a learning opportunity. What can I learn from that dark day? What can I learn from that day that I don't want to get out of my chair that's right there that I sleep in? What can I learn from that experience? And then six, I need to learn to become my very best friend. If I can't take care of myself, who's going to? Yeah, I got special people in my life that take care of me and love me and watch me and watch after me. And that's important. But I have to have and be my very best friend. And then number seven, be willing to process your feeling about your past. The greatest healing that I've ever experienced was when I finally verbally said something that was shameful, but it wasn't, but I thought it was going to be. Something that just weighed heavy on me with guilt, but it shouldn't have because it wasn't my fault. But when I said out loud, out of these lips, I've been sexually abused, there was a healing process that immediately took place. There was baggage and weight that immediately fell off. And there were chains that were broken that held me handcuffed and as a slave for years emotionally. So try to allow yourself to let go and deal with the past and come face to face with it. And then the last thing is ask for help. You don't have to do this alone. And that's what I love about our guest tonight. She started a nonprofit organization from her very deepest pain, her very most hurtful wound. And healing doesn't mean that the pain never existed. It means the damage no longer is going to control you. And when you can get to that point in life, you have cleaned out the wound. And sometimes that cleaning out of the wound is the most painful experience and part, but it's the major experience of the healing. Just some things I wanted to share with you. Tonight, I'm honored to have with us as a special guest, Trina Rufino. And Trina is the CEO or founder, but the originator of the nonprofit group that's called Project Unbroken. And I'm not going to tell you what caused that nonprofit to even be thought about being considered started. I'll let her share that story. But I want you to witness, listen, and lean in to one of the worst chapters of that anybody on the face of this earth could experience. She went through. But on the other side of that, she's now reaching out to other people. So it is an honor to be able to hear all of this story tonight from my guest tonight, Trina Rufino. Trina, can you hear me tonight?
I can. Thank you, Dr. Williams. I'm so grateful to be here with you this evening.
Well, welcome, welcome. And what a beautiful piece of art behind you tonight.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm at my friend's house, actually. I'm in Utah right now in the mountains, a beautiful place to be able to have this call. So,
yeah, fantastic. And where do you normally reside in? You don't have to give us the address. What state?
Dallas, Texas.
Oh, Dallas. Oh, you're Texan. All right. Well, sorry about those Cowboys. we'll talk about that. I'm right across the street from the Texas Stadium right here. But no, I'm kidding. We always have that rivalry. But I was just north of Dallas up in Louisville not too long ago.
And I know you were speaking with teachers, and I just want to say thank you to all the teachers out there for their service, because they're incredible. And my sister-in-law is a teacher, and she's the reason I met you. So I'm just super grateful for all those connections and the work that
Was that in a conference in Georgetown?
It was, yes. Okay. A recent conference you spoke at. Yeah. And I just think it was meant to be that she would meet you and be so moved and say, Trina, you've got to meet this Dr. Williams. You've got to understand. I quickly read the book and started reaching out to you. Dare I say stalk you? No, just kidding.
Well, I love that. That's how you get, I believe, real, genuine, authentic guests. When people want to get on and try to sell something, or they want to get on and, you know, glorify themselves, I can see through that layer of baloney pretty quick. But when your sister was so adamant, hey, you have to meet her. And then when she explained to me your story, it's like, oh, absolutely, I want her to be on the program. So thank you. Thank you for giving up your a little bit of your vacation or your retreat time to be with
Absolutely.
Me tonight.
Thank you so much. I'm, like I said, I'm very grateful. I think that so much of what you said in the open is so true. I don't think I have any more wisdom to add to that. I probably have color to add to it, you know, that because you're spot on with all of the points and what we go through, especially the cleaning out the wound part. Boy.
Yeah. That's a lot. When Trina did, you know, since we talked about the intro a little bit, when did you realize, hey, wait, this is so overwhelming? And then we'll talk about what was so overwhelming. But when did you realize that pain was going to be eased a little bit if you can help other people deal with the same pain? Because when you were going through this pain, you realize there's nobody out there that's doing what you're doing, right?
Right. In going through sort of trying to work through the trauma and the pain we were having and I was having personally, I have an amazing therapist. So I'm very thankful for that. And yes. I did a lot of journaling and a lot of talking to her. And I'll be totally honest with you. I knew I wanted to do something to give back because I didn't know how I would continue living if I didn't, because I really didn't understand why I'm still here. But all of this has been just laid in front of me, honestly, by God, because every single thing, when I woke up in the morning, one morning and started writing, and I couldn't stop writing the plan for this nonprofit. I mean, I wrote for 3 hours that morning, and everything since then has fallen in front of me, and I've just had to do the work to address it and move forward. And I've really just seen it flourish. It's honestly very emotional and unbelievable to me. But I do feel like I have purpose now. And I don't know exactly when that lever turned. And I knew it was probably that morning when I couldn't stop writing about what I thought I needed to do.
I may need to tap into your brain a little bit, maybe in another program. I'm writing a book right now called Embracing Your Scars, How to Turn Your Pain into Power and Purpose in Your Life. And you're a perfect example of that. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to part the curtains and say, hey, Trina, tell us about your life and what's brought you to this point in your life and what's happened to you that you never expected to happen to you in your life.
Okay.
And feel free to go as deep as you wish.
Okay. I will. I'll probably pepper in some of what I'm doing now to help tell the story. But so in 2018, my husband died by suicide. And it was a complete shock to our family. It was totally unexpected. And I know a lot of times people think, oh, there's something leading up to this. And in most cases, there's honestly not. A lot of the family doesn't see that coming. And we had been married 18 years, thought we knew everything about each other. I thought I knew all of his struggles and all the things he was dealing with. But one morning we got up and went out to feed the horses, my son and I. My son was 15 at the time, and we found him. And my life is constantly divided into before that day and after that day, because I don't think either one of us are the same. Neither is the rest of his family and people who loved him. But for us, it was everything literally shattered. And I know you use that word in your book, and we use that a lot in trauma. It's the only word that describes it, shattered. And you feel so completely lost, especially when I had just never even... I'm a very practical, realist person. I think anything can happen to anyone, you know, but I just never thought suicide, we're happily married. Like, I never expected that. So I did not know what to do with it. I had no experience with suicide other than, oh, it's horrible. You know, everybody's kind of, gosh, you don't want to talk about that. So I had no experience, no coping mechanism, nothing. And I'll tell you from ground zero, the moment that you find your loved one and the way the law enforcement shows up, the way everything happens from that moment, I have learned affects how you can heal from it. And that's part of why I started Project Unbroken, because there's a lot of great groups out there that support suicide prevention, which is so incredibly important. I couldn't find any help at the time for my son and I to figure out how to move forward. And I couldn't find any groups that could help the family left behind. What on earth do we do now? So that is what happened to us. Again, it was 6 years ago. And I don't even remember the first 6 months, just the shock, you know, and just being so afraid for my son. I mean, that's it, immediately you go into mom mode, you know, of I've got to protect him. What do we do? And I have an incredible community. I have an incredible family, incredible friends. They all carried us through. And I feel like this is the first time I've been able to say thank you to all of them at once. You know, they carried us through. But the reality is, unless they've lived through that, they can do everything under the sun to help you, but they don't understand what that is, that grief you have when you lose the person you love most in this way. Harvard Medical School calls it complicated grief. And it's really, this grief is, it is different. I'm not saying it's harder or worse, anything. It's just so different because it's really the only time that the person you love that's the victim is also the killer. And it's hard for our brains to grasp that. They're the perpetrator. And so you go through this grief cycle of terrible anger, you know, so angry at them for what they've done and what they've left you with. But then you have this tragic grief and sadness and you miss them so much. And then the next moment you have shame and terror and you just bounce around. My friend calls it a pinball machine of grief when we talk about it. She's like, where are you today? Where are you bouncing? And you bounce around fast. And it can make you just kind of go mad because you're bouncing around so much. And one day you're angry and you might say something that you never would have said about this person that was the most special person to you, you know? So it's a horrible experience. There's lots of horrible experiences in this world that we all have to deal with. I just didn't feel like I had help on figuring out how to get through it. So that's what I want to do to give back to these families and especially the children. The stat I learned during my healing process is that children who lose a parent to suicide are 3 times more likely to die by suicide themselves. And that is terrifying. And I thought, well, we have to do something to help them heal. Because what I saw, there was nothing. I couldn't find therapy. I just didn't know what to do for my son. So, wow.
Did the manner of death of your husband, obviously complicated the grief, did it a layer of on top of it? How could he choose to do this? And then did the blame game come in and just devastate you at certain times?
Absolutely. And it still does today. You know, there's moments where, and I am very blessed. I have a good career. I was able to keep us moving forward financially, at least, probably not as well emotionally, but financially, I was able to keep us going. So many people I met in my support groups had nothing. And no death benefit, right? In so many cases. So they have nothing. a lot of them, if they're military spouses or whatever, they may not have even had a job, and they just aren't able to support their family. So the blame game is real and the anger is real when you're going through. My son was 15. Like I said, raising a teenage boy is hard as heck to do on your own. And there were a lot of times I was very angry and said, I wish I could do that. Cause that was the easy way out, is how I felt.
Yeah. Now, when you look back, of course, you know all the different stages of grief because you've experienced the highest and the lowest of every one of them. But when you sit back and you look at your son, how did the anger, or did he experience one of those stages of grief more that you said, wow, how can we get help? Because this is what seems to be what they gravitate towards. What would that be? With your son, that was just, did you just have one son?
Yes.
One son. Okay. What was that one stage that ended up really chaining to him and dragging him down that was seems the toughest to get through?
I'll tell you, I don't think I know yet because we are still right in that process. I don't know. I feel so lucky that he was willing to talk to a therapist, and he has an incredible person he can call if he wants. But you know as well as I do, it's to get a teenage or just a young man to go sit on a couch and spill their feelings is not really going to happen. So we are very close, and I mean, he's the light of my life, and we talk a lot, but I don't think I know exactly for him personally what has been the hardest. I know he misses him tremendously. I do know just in reading books that kids, I'm not saying my son was because he was a little older, but younger kids are innately sort of selfish. Like that's just how their brain is developed, right? So a lot of the kids I know from my friends in the support groups, their kids feel guilt. That's the thing that drags them down because they feel like it was their fault, because that's the natural place kids go. And that's so sad because we know it was never their fault. You know, it could not possibly be their fault. So I fear that there's that. I mean, I certainly have carried tremendous amount of guilt around, wondering why, and it was at my fault, you know, so I'm sure there's that, but I can't answer that yet. I hope I can in a few more years.
Yeah. Did, was there any, as you look back on it now, what, 6 years mm-hmm. ago, as you look back on it and a bird's eye view of that, was there any red flags at all? Any?
Probably after all the learning I've done, if I look back, yes, I think there were some signs of depression, and drinking more than was, you know, probably recommended. I'm really careful I try to be very careful not to say too much of his story because it's his story and I don't know it, but that's the terrible part. I don't know it. I don't understand why.
Does that add to your pain, Trina?
Oh, yeah.
You guys were so close, but
yeah, you
and us men do this. We hold a couple closets. It's like, if I tell you this, you're going to think I'm weak.
Yeah. I mean, I'm an open book. So he knew every dark corner crevice about me that, you know, so I just kind of assumed it was the same because we were always together and always doing, you know, our family rodeoed and we were on the road together all the time. He was my son's coach. Like we just were very close. And I did learn after that, I think his childhood was probably harder than I knew. I think there were probably things he just didn't speak of, but you think, gosh, I have been next to this person every night for 18 years. How did I not see this coming? That is it. Almost puts me in disbelief every time that enters my head that I think, this did not happen. It's been 6 years and I still say this didn't happen. And then I remember it did.
Wow. Tell you what, we're going to take our commercial break right now. And on the other side of this, Trina, I really want to dig and drill down a little bit with how the trauma of the police, the people that you had to deal with after this type of situation, that's different from a sudden heart attack, something that's natural causes, or an accident. I want to find out a little bit about that kind of trauma. And I also want to find out if faith had anything to be able to help you heal in your journey. And we're going to find out more about that on the other side of this commercial break. That's going to take about 88 seconds, 888-627-6008. If you want to get involved and you have a comment or a question, call in. And we'll be right back with more of the last segment with Trina. Be right back. Hang with us.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. We're with our guest this evening, Trina Rufino, and she is the founder of Project Unbroken, and she's told her story, and we're still drilling down a little bit deeper and finding out more about it, and then we're going to find out about this nonprofit that she is now the founder of and trying to reach out to help other families. Trina, what was the one thing that you needed the most during this crisis that you couldn't find or receive? What was the one thing that would have not made it easier? Obviously, nothing will. What was the one thing that you said, if I could have just had that, it would have really helped?
It was exactly what I want to try to bring to these families, which is someone who understands, someone who has lived it and could tell me the things I didn't know were going to happen, the best friends that run away from you and don't, you grieve that as your second loss, because the community that's scared to talk to you because it was suicide, the rumors that fly around about why people automatically create a reason because they want to make sure they can rule out this is not going to happen to my family because they were whatever, right? Like, not, I didn't, and 100% someone who had a teenage child that could help me figure out where to get help, because that was the hardest thing, was to find therapists and different types of people that were familiar with suicide and willing to talk on it. That would have been number one.
What was then the one thing that you did receive that you said, wow, I didn't know I needed that, but I did, and it came at a perfect time?
Well, I can't provide this one, but I can tell people my faith. I've always been a Christian, not a super practicing one. I think we would go to rodeo church once in a while on the rodeos, and I would read the Bible and have my daily devotion, but I wasn't a super active person with my faith. And I have some friends that really touched me and helped me realize that there's something bigger than me here that is going to carry us through. And you, I knew if I didn't believe in it, I wouldn't make it. And I felt his hand on us all the way through.
Even in the biggest crisis of anyone's life, you still felt his hands and his presence with you.
Yes, 100%. I've even told my son that morning I knew something was wrong, and it was as if I was being prepared, like numbing me a little so I could get through that moment.
Yeah.
Because
you believe in that? Because I do. I just want to know if somebody else does. Spiritual Novocaine, that yeah. You can actually get induced with that right prior to, and then for, like you said, it took you months before reality even set in. I think somehow, do you believe that God can inject that so we can survive that storm for a while? Because
absolutely.
Without that, it would devastate us.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know how I would have survived that.
But then that wears off, doesn't it? And then the pain becomes real.
It does. It does wear off for sure. But again, like I think my faith has certainly become so much stronger, and I see my faith at work now, which is, I've never experienced that before. I've never felt the purpose I have as I do now, which is honestly a beautiful gift. It's a beautiful feeling to know when I wake up in the morning, there's a reason I'm here, and there's a reason that I need to get up and get to work. So I'm so grateful for that.
What about, you mentioned friends that were uncomfortable with the scenario surrounding the passing of your husband, and straying away from that and actually avoiding those difficult conversations. What recommendation would you have for them? Because what did you need from your friends at the time? Did you need somebody to come and talk to you and preach to you, or just somebody to be there and hold you, just somebody to sit next to you? What did you need at that very time?
Yeah, just to be with us.
Just be there.
With me, be with my son, do things with us. That's all. Just be present and not afraid to come to our ranch, not afraid to hang out with us, not afraid of what people might say in the restaurant if they're with us, not afraid of how terrible I looked at the time, like just, you know, just all the things. We had some really close friends that I've lost. We may stay in touch a bit, but a lot of them just, it felt like ran away. Felt like. And I have, again, friends in my support group that have said, wow, after the funeral, no one even came to the house because people just don't know what to say to you. And that was not the case for us. I had so much love coming to my home, and I was so blessed by that. So much family and friends. The amount of people that came into our lives greatly outweighs those that left. Yeah. But I did notice those that left because they used to be a staple, you know? So, I think they've said in their heart, they've said, when I have confronted them about it, they've said, it's just so hard for me to face. Like, they haven't done their healing. So I understand that. And I'm like, well, I haven't either. They said, well, we don't want to make you sad. I said, I'm sad every day. Like, I think about him every day.
Sure.
Come talk about him. That would make me happy, you know, or come talk about what we're maybe doing good and overcoming some things.
So you feel that sometimes they're afraid to even mention his name because, oh, I'm going to bring it back up. Well, you're already thinking of him, right? I mean, obviously.
Not like any of us forget. Yeah.
Yeah. How about the authorities, the police officers, and all the people that have to be on a scene for like that? Did they have good training?
That's a great question.
That's important.
It's a big, fully loaded one. I hope in some communities they do. What I've learned and heard is that most of them, they don't. They did not where I live, for sure. And this is hard because it is their job as police, you know, and it is their job to come find the bad guy, to make everyone safe. That's their job. You know, where like EMT and fire are rescue. They come to bring together. Now, I learned that recently in Dallas, they do have now a group that shows up to a suicide that's known a suicide scene that has EMT, fire, and police, which is amazing. Yeah. They've tried to balance that approach. Now, in most cases still, the police shows up and they immediately look at the family as suspects. So that's, you can imagine, really hard. When they take you apart, they're questioning a teenager, they're questioning me. And they're trying to secure the scene. They're doing their job and they have the hardest job ever. And here's the other thing. They are losing so many of their own this way.
Yes, they are.
So, and they don't have a support system. So not only are they not trained, they're not taken care of because they are not getting help with their own mental health. I can't imagine showing up at a scene every day where there's a suicide and then being expected to handle it well. Our police are just overwhelmed and they're not getting what they need. So it's such a complex issue. I hope down the road, one of my goals is that if once I get to helping families, I hope I can go into some sort of advocacy to begin to help what that first response looks like, because that does compound the trauma. And they even don't, you told me I could go really deep on this show. Yeah. They don't even like take care of the scene afterwards. That's left for the family. So those are things that is, again, I was shocked. And thank God for my friends. Thank God for my friends, because that is, and that's what I want to do with Project Unbroken. I have these families that are living, they can't afford to move, and they're living in the very home where their mom or dad took their life, and there's like stains on the floor. How are they ever going to heal if they can't get out of that environment? We have to help them get out so they can move forward.
Yeah. Did some of the way that they communicated with you cause trauma to be even worse?
Yes.
If possible. I mean, it can't be any worse, but I mean, did it damage more than helped?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's things that when you go to, well, it's considered that it's a crime scene. So they keep everything. So if there was a letter of any sort, they keep it. They don't allow you to see it. So that's hard because you're like, I need to know something. You get that a few months later, maybe. In some cases, like I said, some communities I hope are doing this so much better. And if they are, I want to learn how to share that. I want to help share that.
Yeah.
But even when they give you their belongings back, they give you the weapon. If there's a weapon, they give you the weapon. And that's traumatic to me. I don't know.
Sure.
That. And so I feel like there should be a counselor there, someone that says, this is what you're going to get. You want to make some choices now. You know, would you like that back? Would you not? Would you like it destroyed? There's a lot of easy opportunities to sort of tweak those things. And again, it starts with taking care of these men and women that are on our police force in the first place, because they are totally overwhelmed. So how do we care for them to then allow them to care for us?
Yeah. I train a lot of police officers and first responders around the country. Cook County, I did entire Cook County in Illinois and LAPD. And they, you're right about they're one of the highest suicidal rate occupations in the military that probably is going right now, because that vicarious trauma just is over and over and over, and it devastates, and it's devastating. So hopefully can provide a piece of that in your nonprofit to say, hey, we want to offer this to our communities. And that would be awesome. So let's turn the corner a little bit, Trina. Talk about, how did this Project Unbroken even become even a seed of thought of saying, hey, I think I'll, boom. Did you wake up with it? Was it a divine intervention? How did that start growing inside of you?
Well, I would always, not always, sorry, probably a few years after, when I was healing a little bit better, I would always, the one thing I tell people is that if there's any gift I got out of this, it's perspective of what matters in life.
Wow.
It is little things just don't bother me anymore. And that probably annoys some of my friends and family because I'm like, oh, it's fine. But it doesn't. And things at work and deadlines or someone who's just treating you poorly at work, I just say, you know what? I'm going to tell them what I think. We're not doing that anymore. And I move forward. And I've become really good at hard conversations because I realize it doesn't matter that much. You just have to show up authentically. And that is the perspective I got from losing Michael, and that those little things do not matter because there's all these other storms brewing that we need to address. So handle those things that are piling up. And I always said, I wish I could put it in a little bottle and give it to all my friends so they wouldn't have to experience tragedy to earn that, you know?
Wow.
And so in thinking of that, I really just, I always knew I wanted to do something to benefit some way of suicide prevention. And I did, I literally woke up one morning and I thought, I'd gone to a resort where I learned about being unbroken in this therapy session about how you can be very, you can be shattered, but when you can put yourself back together, you can still be whole. It's just a different kind of whole. And, yeah. And so I knew I loved the idea of that. And I woke up one morning, I started writing and I realized it's about primarily about the kids. We have to help them heal so they have some hope to keep living. And because I knew whenever I just saw a glimmer of hope in my son's eyes, I mean, I was exponentially better. Because you know, any parent out there knows if they see their kid healing from something, I mean, the parent's going to be fine. We're going to be okay, you know, because that's really what matters to us, especially in times like that.
Yeah. Did you mentioned you write a lot? Did yes. journaling help you? And did you journal before this?
I did not journal before this.
But do you write a lot now? Do you call it journaling, or you just write down thoughts? Or
every day, I either write down a prayer or a thought, or it just comes to me. Whatever's gonna needs yeah. to get out of my brain and onto the paper, you know. And it is so helpful to me. It really is. I don't have a strict form. I started it as gratitude, and then it really became more of just a conversation in my head with, you know, what I needed to sort of spill out onto the paper. So it's always pretty raw.
Wow.
So,
do you think you have a book in you one day?
I think about it sometimes. I want to focus on Project Unbroken first. I think all my energy will go there. I also have a full-time job, so wow. Maybe I'll write a book when I retire. That would be a dream for me.
That'd be great. And Project Unbroken, what are some of the highlights of what you try to accomplish through a nonprofit? How can people get, you know, what's the website?
Yes.
How do they want to help? You know, how's that? But tell me what the primary goals and objectives of Project Unbroken are.
Yes, we are dedicated to survivors of suicide loss, so families that have lost a parent to suicide. We support them financially, emotionally, and spiritually.
Wow.
And like I said, that big stat, when I learned that children are 3 times more likely to do it themselves if their parent has died by suicide, I knew we have to find a way to step in and help carry these families forward so that they can, like you said in the opening, keep moving forward. We've got to help them see those little glimmers of hope that they will heal one day. In some of my support groups, I would meet these families. I mean, one example, this young man who was just outstanding, a baseball player, and he's for sure the type of player that's going to be on scholarship. So his college will be taken care of. He's on a travel team. He loses his dad and his mom has 3 other young kids. Says, I'm so sorry, but you've got to get a job to help us. We can't feed this family, you know, much less anything else, much less baseball. So this kid loses his dad, what he thinks is his dream, his future, right? His community, his friends, his team, his coach. How is he not facing terrible depression with that? So that ushered in, I mean, those are the stories that create our mission. That ushered in our first grant that we're doing this year. We just found it in March of 2024. I've only been doing this for 6 months. Yeah, very short time. And our first focus in year one is funding kids' activities, sports, any extracurricular, sports, arts, trade school and education, camps, just whatever they're into. We just sent a young man to the New York Film Academy, and he wants to be a filmmaker. And we're helping 28 kids right now already. So the need is much greater than I had anticipated. Like right off the bat, I had a lot of requests. It was summer, so we've done a lot of summer camps. We've done science camps, football camp, you know, a special swim camp for an autistic child, like all sorts of special needs things that are very costly, hard to do for the single parent that's grieving, probably working really hard on trying to make money for the family, but also trying to raise these kids. So I've heard so many incredible quotes back from the parents. Just, they're so grateful to keep their kids involved in the community because we know that promotes healing. You know, it helps with anxiety and depression, and it helps with resilience and confidence. If they can stay involved in those things that make them feel good, you know, whether it's dance, we have a couple cheerleaders. I mean, we have just so many fabulous stories. I can't wait to really see what these kids do. And maybe as my son is actually helping me on this, which is a tremendous gift. And yes. He said, Mom, are we going to kind of grow with them? I said, I hope we do. I hope we send every one of these kids to college, you know, like I hope we can help them in whatever their desire is as we move through this process and help even more families.
Unbelievable. We have like a minute left. Spiritually, you mentioned that you helped spiritually. How much did faith have to deal and help you with what you experienced, and how do you help others spiritually through Project Unbroken?
I think it has absolutely saved my life. The spiritual part of Project Unbroken specifically is helping people who want spiritual help find churches that have specific suicide support groups, because that is hard to find really hard. I couldn't find anything at the time. Now, you won't believe it, my in-laws lead a suicide support group at their church. They are incredible people that to do that. And so that I help connect people with their right, whatever the spiritual support is they're looking for. So if anyone listening tonight has a church group that has suicide support, I would love for them to message me on the website. It's projectunbroken.org, because I want to create links for people there. We are nationwide. We're not helping families only in Texas. So we're nationwide. And so I'm trying to create really a hub of resources for that, for people to reach out, because it is almost impossible to just find that when you're in need, especially. But for me, like on the faith side is like I said, just meeting you. We talk so much about shared words, about darkness and shattered and all those things. And I just feel like the light, having light come into your life is truly from God. And you talk about that before each chapter of your book, the lightness coming in and the importance of finding that light and following it. And that has been my everyday. How do I follow that? And you're that for me today. So thank you so much.
Well, you're that for the entire world that's listening in. 30 seconds. If you have somebody that tonight has experienced this recently, last couple of days, mm-hmm. what would you say to them if you were face to face with them right now? And remember, we just have a very short period of time left.
I would just tell them to be, like you said at the top, be kind to yourself. Take your life literally minute by minute. If you try to bite off any more, it's almost impossible. So find someone who has been through it. There's so many different resources. I have resources on my website for that. And for sure, reach out for help. Talk to people. Do not tamp it down. I have so many people come to me and said, this happened in my family and we've never talked about it. And I've been carrying it. Please don't carry it, and don't let your kids carry it. I want people to lose that shame, and let's talk about this and get it out and help each other.
Good wish. Trina, thank you for joining us tonight. Please come back. Love to have you back on and talk more about Project Unbroken, but projectunbroken.org. Get on there. the website, and there's a way that you can get involved too financially to help. It's a nonprofit, so that means they're taking in funds to be able to help all of these kids around the country that they're helping, and all the resources that they are providing that very few people and organizations are providing in our entire country. And to be honest with you, our country should be better at this. But we fall in that same boat. We push it away. But yeah, she's embracing this now. Help her make that availability to these families and these kids on her journey after what she's experienced in their lives. Thank you, Trini, for joining us. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
God bless you. As we do each and every week, well, I just want to remind you that no matter what, and I think Trini will advocate this, no matter what you've gone through, no matter what you're dealing with right now, and God forbid, no matter what you're going to be facing tomorrow morning, there's always hope. There's always hope. Never give up on that. And then when something happens that allows you to go down a journey and a road that takes you places that very few people have gone, like Trina, don't ignore that road that you've gone. You need to tell as many people as you can, I'm on a journey and I've learned some things on this road. And if you come and meet me, I'll help you. You help me, I'll help you. Because in that journey, sharing those thoughts and those feelings are so important with each other. You don't have to do this alone. ProjectUnbroken.org. God bless you. Join us next week for another edition live from Houston, Texas. Have an awesome, awesome week. Thank you, Trina, again. God bless. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.